The Athletic.
Instead of taking up that gym membership that you wouldn't use even if the gyms were open, how's about subscribing to The Athletic for just £4 a month as a New Year's resolution? You'll get unrivaled football coverage with analysis and in-depth features from the very best writers around, exclusive Q&As with Athletic staff, and ad-free versions of all of The Athletic's podcasts, including this one. Find out more and sign up today at theathletic.com/totally.
Totally Football Show, European edition. Today, we're talking Zlatan, Pandev, Žižek and other oldies but goodies. We'll hear how Dortmund got stopped by a 55-year-old striker, Freiburg manager Christian Streicher. Also, young players who'll be stars this summer. There's Bayern in Doha, are Parma going down, can Sevilla go top tier, and why the Ligue 1 leaders are still ill but feeling better and better. All of that plus more Messi rumours in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Honigstein, Horncastle, Romeo, Laurent. Yup, set palettes to sophisticate and let's roll with another Totally Football Show European edition. Thank you so much for joining us. It is Tuesday Checks Notes the 9th of February, although little secret, listener, we're actually doing this on Monday the 8th. Yeah, remember how times were then. Anyway, I'm joined by my Euro pals, and it's great to have you all back together to talk about another busy weekend across ye continent. So much to discuss. Hey, Jules, how about Icardi's header? How on earth did he do that?
Is he a header or is he a necker?
A necker. Yeah, so for anyone who didn't see it, and it was Ligue 1, so very few people won't have seen it.
Oh my God.
What actually happened?
It's a cross from the right-hand side, Jimbo, and from Florenzi. And Icardi is just ahead of Alvaro Gonzalez on the side of the box. And the ball comes in like mid-level, if you want. And then he heads it back, but it looks like the ball bounces either on his neck or the top of his back to lob Steve Mandanda and go almost the other corner behind. It's
pretty
incredible.
I see. The first time I thought he'd done a kind of Chicharito on it, but he actually bows down to kind of scoop it backwards with the nape of his neck, and bizarrely, it finds the kind of far top corner.
I really don't think Mandanda expected that kind of trajectory from the ball, and even the ball to even pass Alvaro, and it's this pretty remarkable goal. You could say that Mandanda maybe is at fault, but I think more you celebrate the idea and the creativity from Icardi to try it. If he hadn't gone in, people would have said, oh, that the cross was not the greatest cross and he was a hard header. But the fact that he went in is pretty exceptional, I think.
He tried it from a corner kick earlier at the near post. He tried to basically head in backwards.
Yes.
And I think, you know, because Icardi is a penalty box poacher who only needs 10 touches a game, I think, you know, being around Mbappe and Neymar, he has to come up with a skill. And this is the Icardi skill. It's the necker or the backer or whatever it is. This
Love is it, man. Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, second goal in a big 2-0 win. Revenge for Les Parisiens over the Marseillais, who, of course, have beaten them in the previous Classique this season. But there you go. One of the standout moments. Let's get a quick roundup before we get into detail on the weekend's news of the moments of the weekend around Europe with Paddy Power. James.
Well, I would take one of the headlines from Corriere della Sera, James, which is like, modernity is overrated. Who needs it? Italian football certainly doesn't need it when they've got Zlatan, when they've got Cristiano Ronaldo, when they've got Goran Pandev still scoring goals. Italy still a country for old men and these guys. We saw Zlatan score his 500th and 501st club goals. Still got it, Jimbo. Still got it, much like yourself.
Oh, thanks, man. How about you, Alvaro?
Has to be Papu Gomez scoring for Sevilla. I think that this is one of the big moments of the weekend. His first maiden goal in La Liga, in the win against Getafe for 3-0. So good for the Argentinian. Also, Trincao scored the winner with the winning goal for Barcelona. And that was very important for a guy who has been under heavy scrutiny over the last weeks because he didn't offer the level that he was supposed to offer. And of course, I cannot forget about Rafael Varane scoring a brace to give the win to Real Madrid. Let's don't forget that Rafael Varane has been heavily criticized since that game at the Etihad in summer, because some say wrong in my opinion that without Sergio Ramos, he's not the same type of defender. But well, this time he gave the 3 points for Real Madrid.
And Rafa.
James, the moment of the week was Köln celebrating with the corner flag in the stadium of Borussia Mönchengladbach. They'd won the derby of the Lower Rhine 2-1. And, of course, that iconic celebration, a retribution, or a sample, if you will, a quotation of Marcus Thuram's favourite way of celebrating, which, of course, happened when Köln were beaten by Gladbach in their own stadium when they met first time around. So a bit of payback time.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend, brought to you by Paddy Power. Defences may be looking shaky at the moment, but Paddy's offers are rock solid. If one leg of your 4-plus-fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1 to 5 per leg. Online exclusive, no shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+, begambleaware.org.
That's right, that is Eurovision winning Satellite by Lena from 2010. Number one in Germany in May of that year, when Freiburg were beating Borussia Dortmund for the last time before this weekend. Wow. But a 2-1 victory putting to an end that barren streak after 11 long years. Christian Streich's Freiburg, unexpected kind of mid to high flyers in this Bundesliga, consigning Dortmund to their third defeat in four. Wow, Rafa.
Yeah, wow, indeed. I mean, this is already eighth defeat for Dortmund this league. In this season, they are really in danger of missing out on the Champions League, which would be absolutely disastrous because financially, in this year, more than ever, they need the money from UEFA. And it was another one of those Dortmund defeats where you just wonder, where's all the talent and where's all the quality? Why can't they bring that onto the pitch? Why don't players like Marco Reus show up? He was substituted with 60 minutes or so. Youssoufa Moukoko came on, scored the goals. The goal looked much more lively than all of the other Dortmund attackers combined. And just a sense that for all the slight positive momentum that they had under Edin Terzic, the interim coach, they're still making the same kind of mistakes. Defensively, they were shaky. Marvin Hitz conceded a really stupid goal. Yeah, the same question marks over Dortmund's mentality, their character, all these issues. And what was already a pretty underwhelming season could really be a bit of a sporting catastrophe if they miss out on the Champions League, because that would probably have all sorts of repercussions for what they can and can't do in the transfer market. And if you want to read more about this, James,
oh, yep.
I can point you to The Athletic, where on Tuesday, there will be a piece on Dortmund's travails.
Okay. Does it include that wonderful Schmidt strike by Freiburg? I think the second of their goals.
Wonderful is not the word I would use from a Dortmund perspective.
Oh, okay. No. Well, just to give a bit of love to Freiburg before we move on to the kind of potential disaster and perhaps even clear out of big name players coming up this summer. But top stuff from Freiburg, no?
No, Freiburg are amazing. I mean, it is difficult to understand what it is they're doing because their numbers are never really that impressive, but they tend to be so efficient and they do it with a team that player by player, you really struggle to put anywhere near sort of the top half of the table. Every year, I and a few other stupid people think, oh, okay, this might be the year where they might be relegated, but they... Every year they make people like me look totally foolish and not just perform, but outperform their own ability. And Christian Streich is a bit of a genius in getting so much out of a squad that is pretty limited.
Mm. Now, Dortmund, as you mentioned, having ticked that box, 4 points off the top four, currently lying sixth. They've got Gladbach right next to them, just ahead of Gladbach on goal difference. So Gladbach have a similar battle to try and get back into the Champions League places. I imagine that plenty of big clubs around Europe are kind of licking their lips at the prospect of Dortmund missing out on the Champions League millions, and consequently maybe the likes of Haaland, Sancho, etc. being up for sale at reduced prices.
Yeah, and I mean, Sancho is up for sale anyway. He was up for sale in the summer. The question was whether anyone could meet the asking price. I don't think that Dortmund have any illusions that he will stay for much longer. I think there is an expectation that he will leave if the asking price can be met. I think it's not official, but there are some tentative signs that Dortmund might be prepared to accept a little bit less in recognition of the landscape in the Corona times. But what they, of course, don't want to do is lose both Sancho and Haaland in the same transfer window. Haaland has a release clause kicking in next summer, summer 2022. And it is not inconceivable that somebody might say, you know what, Dortmund, you missed out on the Champions League. Here's more money that you could get for Sancho, for Haaland next year. Let's do the deal now. Dortmund, I think, will try everything possible, whether they're in the Champions League or not, to not make that happen. But there is a chance that perhaps one or two of the slightly less attractive, appealing names that they would have liked to keep, they will have to sell to just thin out the squad a little bit. So I don't think there is going to be sort of wholesale, suddenly everyone's available kind of breakdown of the club. But it might just force them to be slightly more amenable when it comes to doing deals. And it's going to be very difficult if they really miss out on the Champions League. I think for the new coach coming in, and we all expect it to be Marco Rose, to rebuild or to build on what he has in a Europa League campaign, I think it's going to be much more difficult.
Raf, I mean, if Marco Rose leads Gladbach into the Champions League, does that make him less inclined to go to a club that is then not in the Champions League? And if that were the case, I mean, Dortmund become a less appealing prospect for coaches, I would imagine. It's certainly the calibre of coaches that they would like to attract if they're not in a competition that, you know, we've all become accustomed to seeing them in.
Yeah, I mean, it would have a reputational effect, a bad one, of course, for Dortmund. I don't think it'll be enough to change Rose's mind. I think if he agrees to go to Dortmund, and Christoph Biermann, who knows more than me, says he thinks the deal isn't quite done yet, but Dortmund are very hopeful. If he does agree to go there for, I'm sure it's not going to be much less than a four-year contract. I don't think that one season will change his mind. I think Dortmund, by way of income, stature, they are the number two in Germany, and they should bounce back with better management. He'll see that as a challenge. If anything, you might say, you know, yes, it's difficult, but then you can definitely improve on what your predecessor or predecessors achieved, because if you then take Dortmund back into the Champions League, then you're already seen as a success, whereas that would have been the minimum requirement otherwise. So I think it cuts both ways. But yeah, of course, Dortmund need to be in the Champions League. If they do miss out, then they have to get back as quickly as possible. Otherwise, there is a more sort of medium-term damage, if you will, of all the great progress that they've made in the last 10 years being scaled down again. And that's where things could get really, really difficult.
Well, for now, it's RB Leipzig who are the number two team. In the Bundesliga, they had a 3-0 victory at Schalke this weekend. Bayern also won. They were 1-0 winners at Hertha Berlin. Then they headed off to Doha, where they should have played by the time you hear this, listener. They were up against Al Ahly Monday at 6 o'clock. That's in the semi-final of the Club World Cup. The trip was a little bit, well, uncomfortable, Rafa.
Delayed.
They had to sleep on the plane on Friday night.
Yes, James. It was either a case of German punctuality being taken to its absolute limits or a conspiracy, as Karl-Heinz Rummenigge has alleged. He said, somebody doesn't like us. We feel as if we've been screwed over here, because what happened was that the plane was ready to take off either a minute before midnight, that's Bayern's version, or, as the official flight control has reported, 3 minutes past midnight, when, of course, the night flight ban kicks in and no exception was made for Bayern. So they were made to wait on the plane until 10 to 7 and then they had to fly via Munich to change the crew before they could again then fly onto Doha. So they sort of missed most of Saturday being stuck on that plane. And as you can imagine, the Bayern boss is very, very unhappy. Although, you know, they are sponsored by Qatar Airways, so maybe the message that it was very, very uncomfortable for those 7 hours on the plane is not one they want to push too hard.
Perhaps not. If they get through their semi-final, or if they have got through their semi-final against Al Ahly, they'll be taking on Tigres, who beat South American champions, freshly crowned South American champions, Palmeiras in their semi-final at the Education City Stadium in Doha. This game coming up on Thursday, Tigres against Al Ahly or Bayern. Tigres, Jules, featuring
Big Mike Fojinyak.
Wee.
Incredible. I mean, he's been fantastic for them since leaving France and Marseille to go to Mexico. There was a debate on ESPN the other night that he's probably the greatest foreign import that Mexican football, or certainly the Mexican league, has ever seen. And I think he speaks volume.
Who are the other contenders on that, Jules?
I mean, you've got many Brazilians who've played there.
Right.
Butragueño played there.
Okay.
Or Mitchell
played there. Yeah. Pep Guardiola played there. Yeah. You know, there's plenty who played there. Plenty of foreigners played there. But certainly the impact that he's had, and it's not so much the goals, it's how much he's integrated to the whole life there. You know, I think he's it's pretty remarkable for someone, I mean, especially someone who didn't speak a word of Spanish before, to arrive in a country like this, so far from home, and has made it his home. And I think they love that about him. He's very happy there. He's not getting any younger, but if he was to be Bayern or Al Ahly to win the Club World Cup for Tigres, I think he'd be forever the absolute god over there.
Yeah.
And score 20 goals a season.
Right.
And James, one thing regarding Tigres. I mean, yesterday in social media, I could read a lot of people from South America taking offense from the victory of the Mexicans because there is this rivalry between Mexico and South America nowadays about where can you find the best football in the continent. And the truth is that Mexican football is little by little importing a lot of talent from South America as well. So it's the richest football in the continent, all together with the United States football, and that has to be said. And so those South Americans took the wrong, probably, that a Mexican club had beaten a South American club for the first time in years.
But not an upset, Alvaro.
Well, I don't know if it's an upset or not, but I do believe that this is a tendency that will repeat more often from now on, because there is a lot of money in Mexico and in Mexican football.
Okay. Well, Tigres are waiting then, perhaps, Bayern, on Thursday, or Al Ahly. As for Taco Fojinyak, or whatever he's going by these days, he is one of a bevy of kind of veterans who've really had a big... I mean, Tom Brady in the NFL, of course. Ibra, what's Ibra now, 39, James? Scoring his 500...
He turns 40 later this year.
Right, yeah. So he clocked up a brace to take it to 501 goals in his club career. You also had Cristiano, who's, 37 now, scoring. And Goran Pandev as well. Wow, what a blast from the past. With a brace to put Napoli in trouble.
Yeah, another defeat for Rino Gattuso. Big week for him coming up. They've got the second leg of the Cup semi-final against Atalanta, and then they play Juventus. But caught cold by this Genoa side, which has the second best record in the league under Davide Ballardini since he came back for, a fourth spell at the club. His reputation is all about rescuing Genoa and then them sacking him ungratefully, either at the start of their following season and then needing to go back to him at some stage. But Pandev with two great finishes. Remember, he's qualified North Macedonia for the European Championships with his goals against Georgia as well, which, you know, for that country, those goals make him, you know, as important to their football history as, say, Messi is to Argentina or something like that. And he's going to retire after the European Championship. You know, after the game on Saturday night, he said, you know, he isn't going to change his mind, that, you know, he wants to play the Euros and then that's it. And then Ballardini said, well, he's afraid of me, so maybe I can scare him into staying on.
Wow,
so
that'd be amazing.
We'll have to see.
He's only 37. I reckon he's got some seasons left in him. You know, he is the last living link to the Football Italia years, the last player who was active.
No way.
He was already at Inter when Channel 4 were doing Football Italia.
Surely Buffon is, no?
Oh, yeah, Buffon and that.
Yeah.
Yeah. outfield players. Yeah, yeah. Of course, he featured in Mourinho's treble. Then scientists managed to break his DNA out of amber and bring him back to Genoa. And he's running around scaring
life
people.
Life finds a way. It really does in Serie A.
Yeah. There you go. Anyway, that's fantastic. Old people, they still have much to contribute. Jules.
Vittorino Hilton in France, who is 43 and played this weekend his 500th Liga match, this one with Montpellier. An incredible career, really. 43, still playing centre-back is really amazing.
And of course, Joaquin James, who plays for Betis. And last season, he scored his first ever hat-trick against Athletic Club Bilbao. I mean, he couldn't have chosen a better club.
Right. How old is he?
He was born in 1981, so I'm guessing that he's 39 years old.
Okay, yeah. Because Kazumura is the kind of gold standard in terms of...
Yeah, he's the GOAT.
He's the GOAT. The old goat, actually.
The old goat, yeah.
Right. I mean, it's nice, isn't it, to have these guys still out there, still doing it. And it's obviously a triumph of, you know, sports science that they've still got something to contribute. But perhaps even more exciting is when you've got young players breaking through. And it's been a big weekend for that, of course, as well. Not just in Europe, but in the Premier League, too, with Phil Foden's tremendous performance at Anfield. Anyway, we'll talk more about young players later on, but also Serie A news. A big week this for Juventus, James, beating Roma, moving up to third, and this evening hosting Inter in the Coppa Italia semi-finals with a 2-1 lead from Milan.
Yeah, although Romelu Lukaku's back, Hakimi's back, they missed the first leg, so it's a full strength Inter side, although I think Vidal actually suspended, which probably helps their prospects, given Vidal tends to get sent off or give penalties away. But Juventus have won every single game in 2021, apart from the Derby d'Italia in the league, where Inter outclassed them. Last week's first leg of the Coppa Italia semi-final was a bit of revenge. And there's a real feeling that Pirlo's growing as a manager. He was asked, you know, how have you grown over the last 6 months, Andrea? And he said, well, I'm still the same height as ever. But it was mainly to do with the approach that they played against Roma in the 2-0 win at the weekend, where, you know, everyone seemed to pore over Pirlo's thesis, you know, which he had to submit when he was getting his UEFA Pro license just a few days after the start of the season. And it was all about high lines, pressing and interchanging positions. And instead, you know, since Chiellini's been back, he's like, you know what, let's defend deep. Let's hit teams on the break. And, you know, even if we only have three chances, Ronaldo will score two of them. And it's working for them. So, they're keeping clean sheets. They're putting these winning streaks together. And all of a sudden, Juventus look like they're right in the thick of it again.
That's a bit more Allegri style than the Pirlo style that we were sold at the start of the season, right?
It is, but I think he's had to adapt, because certainly after that 3-0 defeat to Fiorentina at the end of 2020, it was change or you're going to be the one who's changed, so to speak, in that they I doubt they would have considered a managerial change at that point. But I think in order to keep Juventus competitive, get them back into the title race, he's had to adapt. And, you know, he says it's going to be a game-by-game basis. You know, against the smaller sides, he will stay true to some of the principles that we saw at the start of the season. But, yeah, Jules, you're absolutely right. I mean, if you compare the two games against Roma, they got picked apart and were lucky to draw the first game in Rome because they played this high line and this press, and Roma just sat back and countered and countered and countered. And they did the opposite this time. They used kind of Roma's tactics against them, and it really worked. So to see this kind of flexibility from Pirlo is very promising if you're a Juventus fan. And also, I think Chiellini's return has just been absolutely massive. I mean, he's hardly played for 18 months, and now he's back. They're keeping clean sheets. They're celebrating blocks and goal line clearances as if they were goals again. And it does feel like they've got back what they were kind of losing since Allegri, which is that solidity.
So your prediction for Tuesday night, James?
Well, at the moment, I think it's difficult to see Juventus losing the advantage that they gave themselves in the first leg, because they've shown themselves able to stop teams. Now it's going to be a different Inter side with Lukaku in it. Inter themselves in very good form. I think it's kind of interesting now. It feels like the first half of the season was kind of pre-season, in that it took these two teams a while to figure it out. They obviously had injuries and COVID, and now they've got more or less their full strength squads back, and they're keeping clean sheets. Their best players are performing. I think, you know, looking into this game, that one of the big narratives from the weekend was Nicola Barella, who continues to have an outstanding season, the best Italian midfield player, although it was a very good weekend for Italian midfielders. If you think Jorginho scored another penalty, he's back in the Chelsea side. You think of Verratti's performance for PSG as well. I think Roberto Mancini's got a lot to smile about. But yeah, just a complete total performance from Barella, not only scoring a goal from outside the box. Dragowski made a huge save from him early on in the game against Fiorentina. He set up a couple of chances for his teammates. It kind of takes the pressure off Lukaku when you've got a player like that who can score and create in the way that Barella is at the moment. So it's going to be a really, really competitive game, I think.
Mm. Meanwhile, the other semi-final clashes between Atalanta and Napoli, who drew 0-0 their game last week down in Naples. We'll talk about that and some of the ongoing problems for Napoli and also prospects for Parma next.
Now, sir, remember, a tattoo is permanent, so tell me one more time what you want.
I want Bruno Fernandes knocking a liver bird off its perch with a free kick, with Oli as a kind of like god in the sky. Oh, and Champions 2021 on top as well.
I can't see anything going wrong there, Man United fan. But if things don't go exactly as expected, Paddy Power's Acca Insurance gets you a free bet if one leg of your 4+ fold Acca lets you down. Paddy Power!
Max free bet £10, min odds 1 to 5 on each leg. Online exclusive, excludes shop bets, excludes enhanced match odds. T's and C's apply, 18+, begambleaware.org.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Wednesday in the Coppa Italia, Atalanta taking on Napoli. Oof. Napoli, where Gattuso is under pressure, as we mentioned before, and results aren't helping. Beaten, as we mentioned earlier, 2-1 this weekend by Goran Pandev and his Genoa teammates. Monday's Gazette says two games for Gattuso to save his job, or it's probably going to be Rafa Benitez. So those two games being Atalanta midweek, and then, oh my word, what's coming up this weekend? Juventus. So Atalanta, first of all, in the Coppa Italia semi-final, they're without Papu Gomez these days, and we'll hear from Alvaro very shortly how he's getting on. Atalanta, who had a remarkable 3-3 draw with Torino at the weekend.
Yeah, they were 3-0 up. Yeah, I mean, they scored, I think, three goals in the space of, 7 minutes, was it, at some stage? I mean, it was quite remarkable. It looked like it was going to be a repeat of one of the games between them last year when Atalanta won by seven goals. And then the end of the first half just really compromised things. They stopped playing and Torino were able to get back into the game. Yeah, again, Atalanta, their own worst enemy, gave a silly penalty away, which they was avoidable. And then there was that scramble, incredible thing where you saw Belotti try a bicycle kick. Zaza tried a scissor kick. They hit the bar and they still managed to scramble at home. And then I think Atalanta faded second half. And, you know, I think one of the reasons for that is they played in the cup in the week. They were late back from Naples. They were without some players. And I think their focus really is on this game against Napoli in Bergamo, because Atalanta reached the Coppa Italia final the season before last. They lost to Lazio. I think there's a real feeling that they want to mark this period under Gasperini with a trophy. They want to win something. It's not necessarily just enough to keep getting back into the Champions League or keep getting into the knockout stages of the Champions League. They want something to show for it. So I think it's understandable that their mind, certainly second half, was kind of on this game, and that allowed Torino back in. But there have been some ups and downs since Papu left. You know, in some games they've looked back to their old selves. They've scored lots of goals. You think about the game against Milan at San Siro, where they're absolutely fantastic. They've looked like they stopped conceding, and then you've got games like this where they make some of the same mistakes that cost them earlier in the season. So it's interesting. I think this weekend feels quite pivotal, really, in the title race, because it's gone from being a 6 or 7 horse race to maybe one that's between three or four. We'll get to Lazio maybe a little bit later, because Lazio on this incredible run at the moment, six straight wins. But with Atalanta, Roma and Napoli losing, all of a sudden that title race is thinning out a little bit, and it's becoming more and more about Milan, Inter, Juventus and possibly Lazio.
Possibly Lazio. Napoli not in that picture. Gattuso's prospects, as I say, not looking particularly good with Atalanta midweek and then Juve at the weekend. Also not looking good at the moment, Parma down in the bottom three, a 3-0 loss to Bologna at the weekend. They've got the worst attack in Serie A, but they bolstered it this week by bringing back Graziano Pelé from Shandong.
Yeah, I mentioned Zaza, I've mentioned now Pelé. I mean, these will bring back fond memories.
Roberto Baggio?
Rafael Nickstein.
Pelé's an Italy legend. 9 goals in 20 appearances, but sure, do that on one penalty and that's all they'll ever talk about.
Yeah,
Rafa, you remember Graziano Pelé?
I was there when he did his little chicken run-up.
Well, no, Zaza was the chicken run-up.
No, Zaza.
Pelé is the one where he tries to psych out Manuel Neuer and, you know, we predictably hear his consequences.
Graziano Pelé che inizia la sua rincorsa. Graziano Pelé, poco fuori dall'area, un saltello, poi la rincorsa, parte il tiro, fuori.
Malissimo.
Malissimo, Graziano Pelé, il rigore...
Rafa, do you remember it now? He goes up after the Zaza chicken run penalty and he points to the corner. He looks at Neuer and he points to the corner like, I'm going to put it over there. And then he does a little diving mime with his hands as if to say, what does he mean by that? I don't know. Probably he didn't know either.
He's going to dink him. He's going to panenka him.
Oh, he's going to dink him. That's what he means. And instead, he fooled everybody by just putting it wide. Ha!
It was a balmy night in Bordeaux. I remember it well.
Yeah. Funnily, Graziano Pelé was excellent against Spain in the quarterfinal round.
He was.
Or last 16. Yeah, he was.
But the thing is, I mean, he's been the highest paid Italian player for the last, well, ever since then, last 4.5 years. Highest paid Italian player, just absolutely just taking all this money home from China. Good on him. Good on him, Graziano, for maximising his earning abilities. That's brilliant.
Is he going to make much difference, do you think, at Parma? And how much trouble are they in?
Parma are in a lot of trouble. I mean, second bottom. I mean, again, we're talking about how the title race kind of thinned out. I think it's true of the other end of the table as well, because Genoa keep winning. Udinese won. Torino got a point when they were 3-0 down. That's going to kind of have a transformative effect on their psychology, I think.
Also, they're unbeaten under their new manager, no? Davide Nicola.
Yeah. Yeah, who's kept Crotone up, who's kept Genoa up in the past. So he's got a track record of doing these sort of things. I think what we've seen over the course of the last 6 months is that Dejan Kulusevski, last year's Young Player of the Year, was responsible for a large part of Parma staying up last season under Deversa. Deversa's come back after leaving and... has some of the same team. But the thing is, we've all seen this with Italian managers. You get a new Italian manager in, they kind of they work with what they had at the start of pre-season and they stick with it. And so if you make signings late in the transfer window, they're like, these guys need time. They need time. And so Fabio Liverani, the coach at the start of the season, he was like that with a lot of the new signings that came in under the new owner, Karl Kraus. And I think it's the same now with Deversa. They've made a lot of new signings at the end of the January transfer window. Do all of them make sense in terms of how the team is set up under Deversa? He's a counter-attacking coach. I'm not entirely sure. I'm not entirely sold on that. I think some of the players they've signed are exciting, like Joshua Zirkzee from Bayern, for example. But is it going to be enough given the position that they're in? They really need to start winning games and scoring goals, because if not, it looks like dear old Parma, who so many people are, think of them as their second or third team, probably Jules's fifth or sixth team, I don't know. It looks like they're at real risk of going down.
Parma born and bred. Yeah, indeed. Well,
plenty.
Yeah. All right, well, still to come in this Totally Football show, James will try and talk about Lazio. We'll hear about Sevilla and Papu's new life down there in Andalusia. And we'll also, of course, talk about Ligue 1. But next up, Alvaro, let's talk about some youngsters.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Colin at Soft Soy Boy says, what players that the average listener may not be aware of, I don't think we have any average listeners, Colin, by the way, but anyway, are going to provide the best value in the inevitable Ligue 1 summer sale this year? Would be good to hear a few names and maybe even which clubs they'd suit. Ooh, Jules.
Yeah, I think that there would be a few. I think one that springs to mind simply because there was a lot of negotiation around him in January was Simakan from Strasbourg, who unfortunately for him got a bad knee injury. Well, not bad injury, but got a knee injury that I think made him stay in France. But certainly between Milan and Leipzig, and it looks more like Leipzig, would get a really good deal with him because he'd be quite cheap, I think, around the 20 million euro mark, 15, probably 15 with some bonuses. And he's only 20 and he's going to be an incredible player. So players like Simakan, who maybe for your average fan around Europe don't really know about from France, those kind of players would be very good. And I think would be quite wanted in a summer where you will be looking for bargains and really good deals because you won't have much money.
Jules, what about the kids at Lens? Like Loic Badé.
Yeah, Badé is really good. Another centre-back. I mean, you know French academies.
So good, he's Badé.
He's Badé. And we've been very good at producing centre-backs lately. And he's another one coming from second division as well. But he's been really good. And even in Lens, they don't expect him to stick around for too long.
To stay there too long. Yeah. Sorry. Anyway.
Too long.
Right. So, okay. So there's a couple of names for you. Colin, I've got a question though. Which are the also this summer, presumably, and fingers crossed, it's the Euros. Which are the young players, maybe the ones that we're not entirely, or at least the tabloids haven't quite caught on to yet, who are going to light up that tournament? Alvaro, have you got someone in mind?
Well, it has to be Phil Foden, Jadon Sancho, but our audience knows about them very well.
Right, I was thinking someone from La Liga.
Yes, I'm going for that as well. I think that... It's a real shame that Ansu Fati had the injury, and apparently it's going to take him a bit long time to recover from it, more than expected, but I think that otherwise Ansu Fati will be that man. And Spanish midfielder Pedri, he plays for Barcelona, he's still 18 years old, he will end up making it to the Spanish squad, I believe, because if you play for Barcelona and if you are a regular starter there, you cannot not be in the Spanish squad. And I think that this guy is going to make the headlines sooner or later because he's got an ability that Phil Foden has as well. They are never uncomfortable in any part of the pitch, which is something that Iniesta had as well. You give them the ball in either box or on the wing or in the central midfield, and they are never uncomfortable with it. They know what to do. And this is a very specific characteristic of Pedri. So I think that Pedri is going to be that player that maybe this summer will make the headlines for Spain.
Okay. Rafa, what about Germany, where a fresh generation has been something they've been waiting for a while? Is that fair?
Well, they have a generation of players that are, in theory, at the right age now to do something quite special. The Werners and Gnabrys and Havertz as well. It's the one below that's the big problem, where they seem to have seen a bit of a drying up of new talent coming through, which is why they're thinking about making Jamal Musiala a full Germany international. He's already played with the Germany youth sides before playing with some of the English youth teams. And there's a bit of a tug of war, James, one of those, the ones that you like a lot. A tug of love, is it? No, but tug
different
of war.
Different kind of tugging, I think.
Yeah. Anyway, to see if he can maybe be made, either German or English. And maybe he's got an outside chance of actually making it to the Euros for either side.
Excellent. Any other players that have not quite registered beyond, you know, Bellingham's and the Jureinas, etc. from the Bundesliga?
Jureina is American, so he's not going to make it to the Euros.
Right. No, do you know why? Because I was just thinking about young players, but that's a very fair point, Rafa. Yeah.
There's a French-born, or probably Paris-born and bred, indeed, young player at Bayern, Tanguy Nianzou, who they have great hopes for. He wants to be called Nianzu now. And he's been injured a lot, but according to Ralf Rangnick, who has a good eye for French centre-backs, he thinks he could be world-class if he stays fit. So he might be one to keep an eye on. Although I think the French don't exactly have a dearth of talent in those positions. So that particular tournament might come a bit too early for him.
And Rafael, is Dani Olmo regarded as one of the good prospects in the Bundesliga too? Because he's still 22 years old.
Yeah, no longer maybe, you know, that young, but certainly a player that's been playing well. I think if you want to add another one, Christopher Nkunku, who is younger than Olmo and is beginning to score goals again, I think he offers something a little bit different. He's sort of a hybrid player, can play on the wings, can play as a number 10 role, can play as a striker even. And I think he's slightly more exciting than Olmo. Olmo seems to be a player with big moments rather than big games. And he needs to make that next step and become a bit more dominant, I think, throughout games.
All right. Jules, we heard about your Ligue 1 transfer prospects earlier, but any others that you want to flag up potentially with a kind of impact at the Euros?
Yeah, we've got a few. I think it's a bit early for Ryan Cherki, who I don't think he's having the season that he thought he would have with Lyon, considering that last season was a bit of a breakthrough for him. But we've got someone like Aurélien Tchouaméni at Monaco, who's doing an incredible job with Niko Kovac, who's improved so much as a sitting midfielder or holding midfielder or even a number 8 sometimes, who I think is quite close to the national team. And Eduardo Camavinga, of course, who people know, but yet still is only 18. So I suspect Camavinga will go to the Euros and might have his chance there. For Tchouaméni, he could still go, but he still has to be very, very productive between now and the end of the season to convince Deschamps. But certainly two of the most brightest young talent that we have.
Jules, you know what would make France win the Euros? A sure thing.
Theo Hernandez?
Why haven't you called up Theo Hernandez? What are you doing? What are you playing at? This is crazy. It's the best left back in the world by an absolute mile.
I know. Really? I know. I'm doing my best.
Is he the best left back in the world?
Is he the best left-sided midfielder in the world?
He's the best left back in the world at the moment. This season,
Good. He's very good. He's very good. And also with his brother already in the national team, it would be great for his integration, for everything. I suspect it will come, but we've got very good left backs in France between Ferland Mendy and Lucas Digne and Lucas Hernandez, who can also play. His own brother is preventing him from joining the national teams. You see,
it's a real shame. It's a shame that Zidane didn't make the most of Theo Hernandez, because Theo was excellent, especially when he came from Alaves. I mean, he was. If this was Pro Evolution, he would have the arrow looking upwards. I mean, he was on a great run of form. But then at Real Madrid, he never managed to succeed. I think that it was a good time for Marcelo too. And it's a real shame for Real Madrid that they lost this player.
Mm. James, I would ask about Italy, but it's just old guys there, isn't it?
Yeah.
No new names coming through.
No, I mean, there's some great under-23s there. Oh, yeah. There's some fantastic players. Like, I mean, Hakimi's under-23. Bastoni, Kulusevski, Vlahovic, Chiesa.
How old's Mandragora?
Mandragora, he is, I think he's 24, 25 now.
Oh, is he? Okay, he's not in the picture. Yeah.
Quagliarella?
Sergio Floccari?
Enough.
Di Natale.
Right, Barella's going to be the star of the Euros anyway, yeah?
I think the way it's panning out, yeah. I mean, as well, Manuel Locatelli. I mean, not someone who is a stranger to anyone who listens to this podcast or goes on YouTube saying, join Man City 2020-2021, Manuel Locatelli assists and passes. But, I think he's been fantastic under Di Zerbi over the last couple of years. I think one of the younger Italians who's starting to really emerge is a guy called Emmanuel Vignato, plays for Bologna, winger, who made his debut a few years ago, I think when he was 16 or 17, for Chievo, same time as Totti was coming on for Roma. And Totti said, do you fancy taking a few of my years? I could still play on a little bit as I was a bit, could go back in time. So Vignato's starting to show a bit of promise there. But Italy are stacked in midfield. Stacked. in midfield. It's and they're all pretty young. I mean,
the one who's having
the worst season is the one who's hyped the most, which is Sandro Tonali, who has not had a very good season at all. I'd say, Milan.
Interesting. Plenty of time for us to look forward to the Euros, which are due to be taking place, of course, in June. Next up, though, let's catch on with a little bit more of this weekend's activities. Alvaro, La Liga.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
Alvaro, Atletico Madrid play Monday night, but meantime, Barcelona and Real both lie 7 points behind the Colchoneros, having played two games more than Diego Simeone's side. And 1 point behind Barca and Real are Sevilla. Could we see one or both of them finish behind Los Nervionenses?
Could be. I don't see why not. Especially right now, Real Madrid seems to be more shaky than Sevilla. They struggled to beat Huesca the other day. Huesca had a number of great chances to win that game. And Thibaut Courtois or the crossbar prevented Huesca from winning that game. But
they came within a Huesca.
Exactly.
But, careless Huesca.
to be honest, one thing that has happened gradually, but I think that it's already consolidated, it's the Spanish top four. I mean, the same top four that we had last season at the end of the campaign, it's basically topping the first four spots in La Liga. And I find it very difficult that Villarreal is going to cut the deficit with Sevilla. Villarreal is fifth with 36 points. Sevilla is fourth with 42 points and a game in hand. So I think that this is going to be the top four in Spain. These are definitely the best Spanish teams. That's why they are in the Champions League. And I believe that Atletico de Madrid is going to win the title because they still have a lot of advantage. And Barcelona, for example, is funny because they have gotten 29 points out of the last 33, which in any other league would mean that you are taking the leadership and topping the table, but it doesn't happen in La Liga. So, yeah, it's a bit frustrating for Barcelona, I guess, but they are definitely in a better place than they were a month ago. So, yeah, this is more or less La Liga's landscape at the top of the table now.
Okay, Sevilla, as I say, just 1 point behind following this 3-0 win at the weekend against Getafe, which featured Papu Gomez's first goal for the club. How's he fitting in there?
He's fitting in well. He played in the cup a little bit. I think that he was lucky that Getafe played pretty much the whole game with 10 men because Jene Nekunam was sent off for a terrible challenge on Lucas Ocampo's ankle. In fact, the Argentinian player is going to miss up to 5 weeks, and he's going to miss definitely the first leg of the Champions League against Borussia Dortmund. So this was news on Monday. And yeah, that ended up in a boost-up between Bordalás, Getafe manager, and Lopetegui. Both were sent off. And yeah, Papu Gómez in the second half, he scored the second goal of Sevilla, and I think that he had a lot of space to shoot from outside the box. And that was down to the fact that Getafe was down to 10 men. But yeah, his adaptation seems to be quick. He wanted to play for Sevilla. He's fit enough to play for Sevilla. And he fitted in a very good team where things are working, you know. There are many fuses in there that don't even have to be touched because everything seems to be work like a machine. And that's great news for Papu Gómez because he didn't go to a dysfunctional team. So this is a good moment for Sevilla. I think that the Copa del Rey clash against Barcelona, double leg, is going to give Barcelona and Sevilla a proper test ahead of the Champions League. And I would say this again. I think that the four teams top in La Liga right now, they are the four best teams in Spain. And they are all of them more or less in a good moment. Perhaps Real Madrid is faltering a little bit more, but finally they managed to get a win this weekend.
Okay, so that game with Barcelona, Sevilla-Barcelona, that's this Wednesday. And that semi-final is the Copa del Rey. And then they face each other again in 3 weeks' time in the league. Just on the subject of Real Madrid, where Zidane, as we mentioned before, was looking very shaky and getting pretty upset with the press when they reminded him of this this last week. They are going to be without Sergio Ramos for 6 weeks. And we all know what happens to Real when he's not playing.
Yeah, and without Eden Hazard as well, because that was strange. It happened last week. First of all, Real Madrid sent an update saying, I think that it was last Wednesday, saying that Eden Hazard had muscle fatigue. And a day later, they corrected that statement and they updated it. And they said that he got an injury in his rectus femoris, basically in his thigh. So, yeah, he's going to miss the next 3 or 4 weeks as well. And this is an important miss as well for the player.
Okay. Not fatty, but fatigued.
Ah, yes, exactly.
Right. No, just in case there was any doubt, you know. Anyway, there you go. Well, that's the situation in La Liga. Next up, massive news from France. Liga. I imagine that post-Christmas, most PSG fans would have been all nice to play at having a title race again, but we all know who's going to be top come season's end, and let's now get this back in its proper order. But are you beginning to get a little bit concerned at the state of the Ligue 1 table?
Not concerned, very excited, but there's obviously a chance, one chance out of four, that PSG don't retain the title and don't win it because the other team.
But do you really mean that? Do you think they're not going to win? Possibly. Probably.
Possibly, yeah, of course. Of course. I mean, I still think they're favourite to win, and I think everybody, even in Lille and Monaco and Lyon would agree with that they're still favourite because they certainly have the best squad, but they're not the best team right now. They don't play the best football right now either. So it makes it even more interesting.
Mm. Well, we mentioned before the 2-0 win that PSG had in Ligue 1 this last weekend in Le Classique, Mbappé and Icardi scoring those goals. Any more fallout, by the way, for Olympique after that game? And this question from Simon Longlon, who says, is it safe to say what's happening at Marseille now is karma coming back to haunt Macron after he finished last season early?
I'm not sure if it is, but certainly it's been a heavy week, as we said earlier, in Marseille, between the fans attacking, the ultras attacking the training ground, AVB leaving the ship, basically a sinking ship. All this criticism and protest against the president, Jacques-Henri Hérault, who's still there, by the way, who's got no intention to resign. There were rumours, big rumours on Thursday and Friday that there was going to be a new takeover, that the club would be sold to a Saudi prince, bringing a lot of money in, which again has been denied by Frank McCourt and his team. That doesn't mean that it's not going to happen, but it seems that right now, certainly it's not anytime soon. And then this defeat, and as we said, the Alvaro injury, the Payet red card, it's a real mess. And they haven't won 9-6 in the league. They're ninth in the table. It's very unlikely that they can get top three and Champions League next season, which would be financially really, really hurting them. So it's not great. And we still don't know who's going to come as a manager. I think Jorge Sampaoli is the clear favourite now, and I think there's a lot of very positive signs that he will accept and come over. But yeah, it's not a good time at the club at all. And we were very excited about the Classic because the two Classic already this season were great back in September with all the controversy and all the drama and the first Marseille win in 11 years. The one in the Super Cup in January was really good as well in terms of level, Pochettino's first trophy, etc. And this one was pretty dull. So it was a bit of a shame.
Okay. André Villas-Boas, by the way, if you missed this, resigning, offering his resignation and then told by the club he'd be suspended pending disciplinary proceedings in the middle of last week after the club tried to bring him in Olivier Ntcham from Celtic. He was having none of that. Anyway, elsewhere, so you got Lille top. They won 2-0 at Nantes. Poor old Raymond Domenech still yet to win. 3 defeats in his last 4.
They're thinking about sacking him now. And they've had a few meetings with other managers like Bruno Genesio, the former Lyon manager. Right. And I mean, it would be, how funny would it be? And you talked about karma earlier. If Raymond Domenech was to get sacked after not winning a single game, I don't know when that will happen or if even it will happen. But it's certainly being talked right now in Nantes, inside the club. And for him to be sacked without winning any single game would be pretty special.
That happened to Malisani when he replaced Di Francesco at Sassuolo. I think he lost every game. He like lost 6 games and was then sacked and has never been seen again, poor Malisani.
But Lille were very good. So Nantes, in fairness, lost to the leaders. There's no, you know, Lille have won six in a row away from home, which which only two teams have done in the history of the league, not even PhD. They were Sedan back in the 30s and Reims in the 50s. So 6 wins away from home in a row in the league is pretty special. So it's not, there's no shame for not losing. It's just that nothing is happening right now for Dominic. And Lille were very strong. And Jonathan David is back to his best like he was in Belgium. And he's pretty sensational right now.
Okay, so they got a 2-point lead over Lyon, who were winners, what was it, 3-0 away, no, at home to Strasbourg. And then a point behind Lyon, you have Paris Saint-Germain, but then not far behind them are Monaco, who similarly, what did you say the winning streak for Lille was? 6?
So 6 away from home and Monaco.
Oh, okay, away, right. Because Monaco are piling up the victories.
So in 2021, James, in the top 5 leagues, the 3 teams that have got the most points, Man City, 24 points, Monaco, 21 points, and Lazio, 19 points. They're the most informed teams in this calendar year.
Guess we better talk about Lazio in a second. But first, a quick word about Monaco, second on that list. A 4-3 win for them away at Nîmes, featuring a winner from Kevin Volland and Alexander Golovin's hat-trick, as Sasha was explaining on Monday's pod. That's the first hat-trick by a Russian player abroad since, do you guys know when?
Since Arshavin
against Liverpool.
4-4?
No. Pogrebniak for Fulham.
Wow.
What?
Yes.
Oh my God, Pogrebniak. I forgot he even existed.
Yeah. Anyway, so Monaco there with Niko Kovac, and they're just behind Paris Saint-Germain. No wonder you're looking so nervous. Jules.
Yeah, the Golo show. I mean, considering he's been injured for most of the season and Kovac is very, very careful. I think he knows what a very talented player he is. And really, if Monaco want to push for this title, they're still 6 points behind Lille, but they're certainly there in case someone drops points in that top 3 and they will pounce because they're so good. And it's funny because Golovin scores 2 goals, then there's a free kick and Fabregas is about to take the free kick and you can hear Kovac shouting from the touchline, no, give it to Golo. And Golovin takes the free kick, scores the free kick. And after the game, Kovac said to in his press conference, you know, the assist is my assist because I had a feeling that Golovin would score that free kick. That's why I pushed for him to take it. And that was the right idea. And there's not much that Kovac is doing wrong right now, and it's, even if they concede goals. But it's pretty impressive the way they play, the form they have. And if then the star player like Volland, like Ben Yedder, like Golovin, like Tchouaméni that we mentioned earlier, keep playing at this level, they will be there until the end for sure.
All right. Well, Liga and Serie A, best title races in Europe, arguably.
Big time.
I'm just going to, before we get on to Lazio, and I think Alvaro, you want to pitch in something as well, just on the subject of Paris Saint-Germain, I wasn't going to mention Messi this week, Jules, but today's France Football has a picture of Leo Messi in a Paris Saint-Germain shirt on its front page with the headline, La carte secrète du PSG.
Yeah, the secret.
Is this why Neymar staying?
Card. So it's how Neymar is doing his best to convince Messi to come, to convince the club to sign him. France Football have details of how financially they could make this work. Ronald Koeman and Barcelona certainly won't be happy with all this first being made in France, players talking about Messi, because obviously Barcelona never do that. Of course, they never do. Oh, hang on. Oh. Yeah, the summer 2019 when they wanted Neymar so badly to come back, I think they pretty did worse than what PSG players are doing right now when they ask the question. But yeah, it seems that France Football believe that this is something that gets more and more possible
that?
With time.
Or do they believe that putting Messi on the front page sells copies?
Yeah, a bit of both. But
okay.
You know, you can't
Alvaro,
blame
what do you
them
believe?
Well, what I do believe is that there are some signs that tell you that Lionel Messi has strong contacts over there for a reason. Di Maria said that there were many possibilities that Messi was going to go to PSG as well. He said that literally last Wednesday, I believe. And of course, Ronald Koeman, who is a person who has just arrived at Barcelona, and I do believe that Ronald Koeman is a genuine man. He said that he didn't like it at all because, you know, he's speaking his mind all the time, and that is something that at the beginning was a bit baffling because he sounded like a blonde robot with no feelings, but at the same time it's becoming something very very important for Barcelona that somebody with common sense, because the board doesn't have common sense, somebody with common sense like Ronald Koeman is saying what many Barcelona fans are feeling, that it's not nice to talk about Lionel Messi's future all the time.
He did the same with Memphis Depay in the summer. No one said anything. Nothing. What are you talking about? Everybody does it. You ask a question, would you want to play with Messi? And you say, yes, of course, I would love to play with Messi. He's my friend. Koeman did the same with Memphis Depay all summer with Lyon. And Lyon didn't say anything. It's the same for every club. If you ask the question, and Pochettino is very careful in saying, like, I don't want to talk about any other players. You know, it's Messi and, of course, all the big players. You would want to work with all the big players. But if you ask the questions every week, there's a point where you're going to say, yeah, I like him, like Koeman did with Depay.
Which is different.
Or Eric Garcia.
This is different because Koeman asked for Memphis Depay. So we know exactly what he wants. That's why I'm saying that he speaks his mind out.
Memphis Depay is under contract at Lyon. Ronald Koeman came on publicly and said, I want Memphis Depay to come to Barcelona. What's the difference between that and Angel Di Maria saying, I would like to play with Messi in Paris? What's
Koeman
the difference?
Koeman is the manager. Koeman said that he wanted Memphis and he asked for Memphis.
Yeah.
But Barcelona didn't have the money. But he wanted the player and
PSG
he asked
players
for
and Pochettino want Messi in Paris. So, and Lyon never said to Koeman, stop talking about Memphis Depay.
I think it's the difference.
But what's the difference? There's no difference. It's exactly the same.
But I kind of agree with what Joe's saying there, Alvaro. It seems a bit rich for Koeman to complain about another club talking about trying to get hold of his player when he's done that himself in the past by Memphis Depay. But was this why Messi wasn't starting this weekend for Barca?
No, not at all. Not at all. Koeman is giving Messi a lot of rest this season because he's 34 years old and obviously he's not as strong as he was before. And it's working. That's the thing, that very few managers have been able to convince Messi of this. And he played, Messi played a lot of time in the Spanish Cup against Granada. Barcelona managed to get a remontada and to qualify for the semifinals. And against Betis, he played only the second half, but he had an impact from the beginning. He scored the goal, he took part in the build-up of another Barcelona goal. And I think that there is no punishment on Messi or anything like that. I mean, there is an acknowledgement that this is the best player in Barcelona. And he's proving it. I mean, maybe he's not scoring in the same levels that the previous seasons, but his game has been excellent. And against Granada, Barcelona wouldn't have won without him, for sure, because he was the leader in the team.
Okay. Came on, as you say, this weekend against Betis and scored, I think, within 3 minutes of making his appearance. Well, there you go. So that's what France Football are talking about aujourd'hui. And we'll see whether history judges that headline kindly. To finish off, though, today, James, how about you tell us all about why Lazio's current run is the real thing and not one of those kind of decent stretches they've had before collapsing and then et cetera and so on.
Well, it remains to be seen how long it lasts, because I think one of the main factors behind it is that they are not in the Champions League and they're not having to put up with that crazy testing regime that they were going on with, you know, where they had the guys in Avellino who were doing their tests.
In Perugia.
And there was Synlab doing UEFA's tests and they were ruling out all these players. And Inzaghi was like, who can I count on to be in my team? I have to basically put a squad together with all these guys who don't even have Wikipedia pages, and you know, maybe even one of them is the great grandson of Mussolini. That was another story of the week. But I think because they can rest and recover from, you know, one game to another over the course of a week, properly sort of game plan, yeah, that's when you see the best Lazio. That's what happened when they went out of the Europa League and they went out of the Cup early last season. They went on that incredible run and they're doing it again now. And you hear Ciro Immobile saying it is the Lazio back to their old best. Yeah, they have in some respects kind of plugged some of the gaps that were exposed when they came out of lockdown last year, when they were neck and neck with Juventus and probably the most informed team in Serie A going into the kind of pandemic enforced break. And then it all fell apart from them because they're having to play every 3 days and they didn't have the squad for that. And you know what? You have to say that, you know, we've mentioned Ronaldo scoring goals for Juventus, Zlatan scoring goals for Milan, Lukaku for Inter. You know, the only other team that has a real kind of certainty up front at the moment is Immobile, with, you know, Lazio. Immobile keeps scoring 14 goals this season, 19 in all competitions. He seems to have reached a complete other level in terms of maturity after winning the Golden Boot. And then it's weird saying this, but Pepe Reina's had a very good season. He was supposed to come in and just be a backup keeper for Strakosha. Then Strakosha got COVID. It took him a long time to get back. And in the meantime, Pepe Reina comes in. And now Pepe Reina's like playmaking from the back. I mean, he practically assisted two of their goals in the win against Atalanta. So, yeah, for now, things are coming together. And we'll have to see, James, because at the weekend, they play Inter. So if they do something in that, then maybe we can again have another conversation next Tuesday about Lazio and their title chances.
As it stands, they're neck and neck with Roma. Roma just in the top four on goal difference, but their neighbours and arch rivals lying level with them on points in fifth. Crikey. All right, we're looking forward to hearing how that goes in next week's show. Hope you guys all have a terrific week. Rafa, if Bayern have qualified for the final on Thursday, good luck against Tigre and Big Mac for
Thank you. I'll pass it on to them. They'll be very happy to hear that, James.
Excellent. There you go. We're rooting. Rooting. And yeah, that's it then, listener, for today's Totally Football Show European edition. Thanks to Rafa and Jules and James and Alva and special guest producer Ben. And you, listener, have a terrific week. And we'll catch up with you next time.
You've been listening to the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and follow us at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of the Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.